Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's Friday, just a couple of hours to Heart Attack Day.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, Almud. It's literally a couple of seconds that we begin.
That's how I say, welcome.
Well, you know.
It's Friday, guys. It's Friday and it's the 13th of February. And I don't know what the Greeks were thinking, because if you look at, both Greek and Roman mythology, whether you're looking at Valentine's Day from Eros or Cupid, you know, it's more often depicted as a toddler with a bow and arrow. And this arrow is supposed to be filled with erotic desire. And if you ask me, that's a lot of power in the hands of a toddler.
Erotic desire is also pretty powerful thing to say,
which is why I'm saying Valentine's, it's an international let's get laid day, let's face it. Now moving on back to Home Run.
Guys, we didn't start off on the best in the scenario, but yeah, just letting you guys know.
I'll just keep everything for Sunday.
For those of you guys that have to promise things tomorrow, I feel sorry for you, because obviously I'm not to say that I'm a super bachelor, but you know what, there are perks.
Yeah, you know, look, thank you very much for pointing to, you know, for bringing up the whole promise thing. Guys, I don't care how much promises you make. Don't give her the whole world, because there are 8 billion of us and we are not going anywhere.
A whole bunch of us have already promised the whole world, Helmut, just for Saturday.
Okay, look, at this point, ladies, if you are falling for this, it's not on us.
The internet exists.
Come on.
If you're that gullible to say yes just for one day, what was that thing that the one guy said on a group yesterday, on another WhatsApp group, where the guy was like, apparently the guys in Korejas are hosting a speed dating event just for Valentine's. And then one of the social media visitors who saw this post was like, yeah, and then just to be heartbroken by Monday.
Yeah.
You know, really it's a bit of a complex thing.
Well, we know our people.
Well, the worst part is that the person also commented there was that everybody knows each other. So that will fuel into the single market by Monday. So yeah, you know, it's a complex situation.
Yeah. So, let's talk about our oil industry now. It's still in the process. It's still a work in progress. We are looking at 2034, 2035. And if you hear someone saying 2030, I don't mean to judge. Who am I kidding? I am judging. Yeah. Now, there are two words that I actually had to familiarize myself today, and that's upstream and downstream. It turns out what I was able to gather is that, especially in reference to the oil and gas industry, because that's where I was looking at it from. Upstream describes the process from drilling to refinery. Now, from refinery upwards into finished products, that's downstream.
Yeah. I don't know why they went for a river explanation.
Yeah, because I'm thinking of it more in literal terms.
Yeah. The worst thing is also the best thing that you can see from upstream, downstream situations is the retail sector that explains it to you in channels.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the starting point and you've got the ending point.
Producer. To the end consumer.
Now, when you get to the mining sector, I don't know what these mining sector guys were thinking, coming up with their own terminologies about upstream, downstream. They're not streaming anything. And the worst part is they're not streaming anything.
Nope.
I mean, if the oil is pumped somewhere else, Helmut, and the petrol that you are using in your car in Namibia, in Windhoek, having to understand that it's not even the same barrel of oil that your petroleum or your diesel in your car comes from. It's not even the same barrel. Your petrol, what's the octane? Your 95 octane or whatever diesel variant that you find here in the Namibian market,
yeah,
is probably sourced from another market. We're not even told what market our diesel and petrol comes from. Well, that's the worst part. So to even speak about streams, if you're literally talking about an ocean has never been a stream.
I think it's a marketing or it's a market concept or something, an economic concept or something.
I think it's more in the economic scope of things, yeah, because the thing is
it's
how
more
much
in the economic scope of things,
when
yeah.
you talk to marketers have they're connected to consumer trends, they're connected to societal norms, they're connected to things from language to color design to the kind of words they use in promotional content and activities to literally what the product has to subscribe to. What do I mean by that, for example? I was given an example once by our lecturer back in, when I did my marketing diploma at Polytechnic before it became NAST. The lecturer in that gave us the lesson was, I think it's the lecturer that now recently deceased, my former lecturer. Or the other one that went to Canada, the Nigerian one. But he gave the two of them, they gave an example of, the bomb, Sambok.
The what?
The bomb.
What's that? Some kind of ointment?
Yeah, that ointment. Yeah, Sambok. You know that bomb?
Yeah, I do.
Now, was it Sambok or was it... Vicks. No, it was Vicks. The other guys, the mint ones, Vicks. Yeah. The Vicks guys could not sell under the brand name Vicks in Germany. Because the marketers discovered that local language, which is German. Now, if you look at the name Vicks is literally an ownership element. It's a name, Vicks, like Victor. But it's spelled with a K at the end, V-I-C-K, Vicks. So they couldn't even move into the German market because they discovered that the name Vicks there meant something derogatory in the German market.
Oh, boy.
So how are you going to market something that just did not align with good-natured, messaging in a local market like Germany? And they had to change the name of the product. Now, when I say something like that, Helmut, it has to show you primarily in that assumption that you had primarily that how the oil market tries to differentiate itself, but it still operates in the same consumer markets, meaning there's still an end user that needs to be participating in this discussion, that they speak of upstream, downstream situations. But we have to allow these guys with their own.
Yeah, they have their own technical language.
They want to be in their own club. Let them be in their own club with their own weirdness, because primarily, if you look at this discussion, it is literally the everyday retailer description. Starting point. There's a starting point in the channel, meaning someone goes and gets the thing out of the ground.
Yeah.
And then in between, there's a whole bunch of actors. And then there's an ending point because it gets either you find it in plastic, you find it on a solar panel, you find it in your car, you find
it in a service station.
In a service station, at a truck, in the airplane. Clothes you're wearing, the toys your kids are playing with, various particular other uses across the broader consumer market.
Yeah.
So in my particular eyes, it basically looks like a channel. It is a channel.
Yeah.
But if we have to deal with this, confusing the, let's confuse the other people in outside of the sector with upstream, downstream situation, you're like, what's a good thing? But anyway, we are digressing.
Use the language.
We're digressing. But yeah, so you still said that you still have to get used to the upstream, downstream terminologies.
Yeah, because that the upstream, downstream, these are the sort of like words or phrases that you keep hearing in most of these oil and gas discussions.
Yeah.
And, like, today's home run is based on the, you know, it's based on the amendments of the petroleum, exploration and production amendment bill. Now, now you are looking at it, well, ever since we were our oil, you know, the oil discoveries. I mean, sort of like trying to go through the process from, you know, from the surveys to the installation of the necessary infrastructure to production. And right now we all have, you know, like right now, if there was a skip button, would have a lot of us would have pressed that skip button so that we can get to production.
Yeah.
But
plus us getting older as well.
But
me advertising more gray hair in my beard for no reason.
Yeah, but there are two things that you have to consider here. The good thing that, if you look into Namibia's oil and gas, for example, where we are, from the look of things, like, every group is busy with what they do best in, you know, with regards to the to participating in Namibia's oil and gas industry. The petroleum engineers guys or the petroleum experts, the drilling experts guys are busy with the exploration and, you know, are busy with the exploration and the, you know, the projection of when or when we are going to, when we are, you know, when we are going to start with production.
And
the legislation guys are also, you know, they also want to, they don't want to be left, they don't want to be left behind. Hence the whole amendment things.
Wait, Hamud. There's a reason why I shared the minister and the amendments he suggested documents with you.
Yeah.
Without sharing the opposition party's contributions. The reason why I shared it, Hamud, is because remember what the, what's the thing's name? The baseline surveys report highlighted.
Yeah.
We also need to, but before we actually continue, guys, we're going to quickly take the short break and then we'll get into the
from
fascinating.
The baseline survey.
Yeah.
Celebrate your loved ones with ShopRite this Valentine's Day with a wide range of everything you need for the perfect gift. Celebrate love and low prices with great deals like a 100 mils Gold Series Ladies Perfume, all variants for only $49.99 each, and Red Velvet or Valentine's Cake for just $109.99 each. Celebrate love and low prices this Valentine's Day. Offers valid until 15 February 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Welcome back. We continue. You were saying.
Yeah. So, the reason why I didn't supply with some of the contributions that came through from the opposition parties, was primarily Hamud.
Yeah.
That the baseline survey highlighted we needed to, in terms of the legal framework, needed to be updated and modernized to deal with, or to cover the developments in the extractive industry that was happening. Secondly, the reason why you and I had the EITI discussion in the first half of this week was also sort of like to give the listener the precursor so that they know that this thing exists out there, EITI.
Yeah.
It exists. And then when you look at the development of what Minister Amutse did 2 weeks back, primarily by bringing forward the suggested changes to the Petroleum Act and his speech that he gave, because here's the nice thing. This is the part of his speech I like, just to read an excerpt, dear listeners.
Yeah.
This moment calls for a robust, modern, and transparent legal framework that can guide our upstream petroleum sector responsibly and efficiently. However, going down in that speech and looking at the suggestions given, he's literally giving what the president said literally last year in inauguration speech was that much of the oil exploration and anything to do with Namibia's oil sector would be concentrated in the presidency. He's literally giving the powers in the act from him, the minister, to the presidency. So templates across the African continent have not been reassuring. When I say have not been reassuring, okay, let me start even from a very, very, very basic example. Marikana is still unresolved. The current South African president is a major shareholder, not a majority, a major shareholder in the mining company that owned the Marikana platinum mine where the Marikana massacre occurred.
Yeah.
Journalists have proven in South Africa that there was communication
of what happened that day between the board members of the mine, not the management, the mm-hmm. board members of the mine, and the senior police on the ground. That gentleman, one of those particular board members, is now...
Hang on a second. Why is a state entity like a police taking instructions from a board? Okay, from a board of a private entity.
Because okay, what was happening obviously is that the police had shown up on behalf of the owners of the company.
Okay,
the company at the mining while the miners were busy striking.
Yeah.
The police showed up sort of like to be the security. Which is weird.
Security for who? For the miners?
For the mining company. For the mining company. Now, the worst thing was the mine representatives, the mine union representatives were busy negotiating with the management on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And in between, communication was taking place. And then, obviously, the event of the shooting happens, which is known as the Marikana Massacre.
Is that something that happened intentionally, or is it a result of a broken telephone type of communication?
The evidence given seems like intentional. Meaning evidence of the communication points to intentional. However, the phrases, the wording used does not clearly say, to go and end the lives of these miners who are also family members, who are also husbands and so on and so forth, and breadwinners. That's not the language that was used. So you can't, there's a lot of ambiguity that would exist.
Okay.
But bringing you back from Marikana.
Yeah.
If you now look at the extractive sector playing a pivotal role, and a pivotal role being now decision-making regarding the direction of the extractive sector, I'm not putting any fault with the president. I'm not. Or with presidency. But she did make this statement last year, specifically in inauguration speech, and also when the removal of the previous Minister of Mines and Energy took place or happened at the end of last year, she did highlight that decision-making will emanate from the presidency. I'm just ending it there. There's not going to be no further assumption on my side, dear listeners. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to speculate on this way, that way. Namibia has its own particular identity. This is now only one full year, if you count in calendar terminology, of, the presidency being in action. So we obviously have to see how quickly these amendments are acted to the bill, to the act. These amendments are brought to the act.
Mm-hmm.
And also whether or not we are actually modernizing the act. Now, you and I obviously also have the suggestions that are suggested here with us in the act itself. I tried to write it completely out for the article that appeared in the Wednesday edition of The Villager. Unfortunately, we had to, in terms of time, because the article had been on the shelf for like a week and a half. So it was considerably cut, dear listeners, just so that you know. But primarily, the aim is that a new position will be, it's almost like an economic advisor, but it's a deputy director or deputy something director.
What's that?
Director general. Yeah, that's the position's name. That will come out of the act.
Yeah.
And the person that will be in
deputy.
The something.
Director
general.
Yeah, the unit will be headed by the unit name that will be coming out of this, these amendments being proposed is what will be called the upstream petroleum unit.
Yeah.
According to the minister's speech, a new regulatory authority to be housed in the office of the president.
Yeah.
Which sounded a little bit like green hydrogen to me. The unit will be headed by the director general and a deputy director general who will be responsible for directing, managing, and supervising all upstream petroleum operations in Namibia. At this point, I'm asking myself so many questions, one of which is where does the Ministry of Mines and Energy comes in on this one?
And also, how does the reporting function specifically by entities like NAMCOR?
Yeah.
How do they specifically position themselves? Do they now have four bosses, which is
Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Mines and Energy, the Presidency, and now this unit, this particular consultative unit. And obviously then there's also the oversight abilities from the National Assembly guys.
Yeah.
Because they obviously also...
The standing committee guys.
The standing committees. Yeah. Let's say standing committees. Because you've got most natural resources and there's most the Committee of Economic Affairs.
Yeah.
The other one. Natural resources, I don't know, but yeah, it's a good thing they are split from each other.
Yeah, they split. You have the natural resources, economic affairs, you have public administration.
That one too as well. So that means they've technically got like five bosses, and then you've also got potentially if the Auditor General's office also starts looking into SOEs.
Oh, they're going to look, all right.
Then that makes it six bosses just for an organization like NAMCOR.
Like they have to provide information across accountability.
Across the board.
Yeah.
So this then makes, if the listeners are now looking at that weird sort of like template, it makes the reporting structure a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the other thing as well. The companies are operating in our petroleum exploration activities. Now I have to look at this template of like, there are now like six or seven potential entities.
You have to report to.
That you've got to share information with.
Yeah.
First and foremost, the oversight committees, as we know it, are the direct representation for us, the electorate, you, the ordinary Namibian on the street.
Yeah.
That's what these oversight committees are supposed to be. These oversight committees then take, okay, luckily what Helmut and I have now observed, because I downloaded a whole bunch of other committee reports that we still have to factor into our planner, Helmut, is that it seems that events and discussions that they did last year are now, you know, the reports are done, the reports have been tabled in the National Assembly. We have access to those reports now, and those reports ultimately will help us to understand actions, recommendations, and various particular things on the grounds from the various visits that have taken place last year. So that's a nice thing. It's meaning the turnaround time for those oversight activities to literally take off, the MPs go into their things, they meet with stakeholders, they compile their reports. The reports get submitted at the end of every year. We see it at the start of the new year, and then we go like, okay, turnaround time is a lot shorter. Instead of reading about something that happened in 2023, and now at the end of the five-year cycle of that parliament, because this was now the eighth parliament, of that parliament now, we have to now hear of a report of an activity that happened in 2023 or 2022, which is ridiculous. So, first and foremost, it seems like we're speeding up that cycle that our Bible, the Guide to the Namibian Economy, highlighted that for the oversight committees from the National Assembly and National Council to act and to dispense their reports, it took too long for them to do that. We probably will have now shorter turnaround times. And the other bonus on this particular discussion would be, we obviously have to look at, because we've already seen a precedent in terms of how the president acted with the previous minister of Mines and Energy in terms of his removal, in terms of, you know, that we have to maintain transparency and accountability measures.
Yeah.
And obviously adherence to new policies that are being brought in so that, you know, we play to the transparency and accountability factor of things. But there's a specific reason, Helmut, why we had the EITI discussion.
You know where that takes me? Obviously the Auditor General's report, working in silos.
The one of agriculture.
In silos. Because that's what I keep observing, at least personally.
Yeah.
And a lot of these reports. Because, we did talk about the EITI, transparency report.
Yeah.
And the recommendations coming out of civil society is that it's much, you know, it's just easier. This is just a recommendation. They are not dictating terms. Yeah. They're just a recommendation, providing recommendation from an expert point of view that, it's much easier to just, join the EITI, than build a whole transparency extractive industry, legislations from the ground up. We can do it. My fear is it's going to take until the you know, human extinction is knocking at the door.
True.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, what you're looking at here is, especially when it comes to this speech, the Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy's report, Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy speech and the EITI discussion, they are somewhat in conflict with each other. Yeah, which is, the civil society that is siding with Namibia joining EITI and the guys from the Ministry of Mines, these guys must be in the same room. Just, talk about this.
But they weren't. Remember.
Mm-hmm.
When I sent you the audios, remember what the IPBR guys said?
Uh-huh.
Ministry of Mines guys were meant to also add something.
But
they withdrew a day before. And when you looked at the timeline,
uh-huh.
you know, when that happened last week
mm-hmm.
and when they withdrew. So Minister Amutse, the week before last week, had submitted this bill with his speech.
Yeah.
And then the Minister of Mines guys was supposed to participate in the IPPR's discussion with the EITI. Yeah. They withdrew the day before, which was the Wednesday. And Friday, I start seeing images and content of Deputy Minister Kudensha Kruene in Cape Town at the mining indaba in Cape Town. And okay, in between the PRO one of the PRO officials of the Ministry of Mines and Energy asks me if I'm angry with him because I asked the question in terms of, did we know about the ministers going to the mining indaba in South Africa?
Yeah.
And then, for some reason, I had to apologize there in between because people think that my tone when I ask questions on WhatsApp groups, I seem to be angry. I'm never angry. I'm a logically thinking person. I ask a direct question. The question is short and concise. I'm not apologetic, but that also includes a colleague here at the office.
Really?
I know he's listening. I know he's. Yeah.
Okay. I know it's not me.
So, the discussion that stems from there, Hamoud, is literally when I read the timeline of things.
Yeah.
In terms of what you know, just highlighted now, it makes it.
They saw the confliction in.
Not there. Suspicious even. It just makes it. It's, what do they call that word? It's a weird coincidence of events.
Yeah, look, there are three ways.
Well, I should have been a police. I should have been an investigator. I should have been a police officer.
Well,
I would have loved this, but yeah. Okay, besides the violence and other things.
Yeah,
you know?
Me neither.
Yeah.
Now, there are three ways that I'm looking at this when it comes to this, when it comes to the Minister of Mines and the, you know, civil society's point of view as with regards to transparency, especially in the extractive industry.
Yeah.
This bill seems to the Petroleum Exploration and Production Amendment Bill.
Yeah.
Because you are looking at exploration from exploration, building infrastructure, the necessary infrastructure, and then you reach production. That's what we are waiting for. And this is Exploration and Production Amendment Bill. Now, the bill seeks to, according to the minister again here. Now, if you go to point number three, that's, it speaks about transparency and parliamentary reporting.
Which is a benefit. I mean, okay, the words are there.
Yeah.
As I said, these are so far just words.
Yeah.
A partial action has taken place, meaning the motivation by the minister.
Yeah.
The words are there. The partial action is so far starting off, but it's also preceded by other actions that have taken place somewhat. So we've obviously got the president's indication, clear messaging and indication from last year that we have to know and the presidency has to know about decisions that take place with regards to oil exploration. Not just oil exploration, anything to do with upstream oil activities.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has been to be in the loop because.
So in other words, downstream, because we don't refine it, downstream is not on us.
It's not just that downstream is not yet on us. Remember, because everyone from Iran to who's the other country that is trying to sell us, even China to help us with building oil refineries are trying to sell us their idea or pitch to us their best idea for oil refineries.
Yeah.
The Iran idea, guys, if you don't remember, back in 2024, was it 2023?
Was that when they gave us a steel discount?
When our, yeah, the steel discount, when our colleague, what's her name? A former colleague, Justicia, went to the Iranian ambassador's event with the Namibian media, and people were just selling us lovely dreams there about steel and oil refinery technology. And we are sitting here in Namibia going like, it's a, you want Namibia to touch you? Because so far, anyone that touches Iran, you know, they are on the radar for new versions of, or new patches and downloads and updates for democracy versions, you know? You don't want to be, you don't want a patch update for democracy in your own country.
Yeah.
You can go and look at Venezuela. So those have been some of the particular concerns, and it is a concern because some of these countries are not always the best templates of how a natural resource is used. Norway is still the best. I'm convinced on the Norway template. I'm convinced on the Alaska template.
Yeah.
I've asked so many people about the Alaska template. I've asked, I now know that EITI is literally a Norwegian initiative.
Yeah.
And what Namibia can learn for a country that has a smaller population than Norway, the Norwegian template is still the best alongside the Alaskan template. I mean, just imagine the Alaskan template, Helmut. At the end of every year,
is excellent.
You can look at a extra paycheck tax free just like that. What? Just like that. In your bank account. As long as you didn't commit any crimes.
That's a crime reduction strategy. That's what I was
it
about.
It truly is. It's more like a behavior controlling mechanism to say.
I wouldn't say control because there's money involved. And two.
But they are telling you. As long as you don't commit crimes.
You're just incentivizing being good
behavior. I mean,
yeah, law abiding citizen.
I would have said more like Catholic boy, you know, Catholic booker. Catholic altar boy behavior.
Yeah.
But it's literally saying you should not have a criminal record on your name.
Yeah.
And you should not have committed a crime in the state of Alaska. And you just have to prove that you've been living for more than 6 months, at least six and more than 6 months in the state of Alaska. Then you are eligible for payment.
Yeah.
Helmut, like I told you, that highest payment that came out 2 or 3 years back, $3,000 at the end of a calendar year, just like that. $3,000 times, at that stage, the exchange rate was what, 20? So that would have been 60,000 Namibian dollars, just like that, clean, in your bank account, tax-free.
Yes, imagine that December.
And that is, you don't even work in the oil industry.
Yeah.
But because you're a resident of the state, you're getting that wonderful...
And you did not commit a crime.
You didn't commit a crime.
Yeah.
You lived off that wonderful land, going to your
18 You're just busy running out from fights.
Doing
even though you go to the gym.
Your side hustles, which are legal. No illegal side hustles.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to work. That's all. Just 60 grand like that. Now imagine that happens every year. Every year. At the end of that year, you get another payout. Doesn't matter if it's lower than the previous year's payout. It's still a payout that you didn't have.
Yeah.
It's money you didn't have.
Yeah. So, on the transparency part, the reason why I said these two must, sit in the same room is because I don't think they're agreeing on, okay, they can sit in the same room to basically agree to disagree. That's a good thing too. Yeah, they can say, you know what, we are going with your idea of adopting the EITI, you know, joining the EITI. Or, we are not joining the EITI, but we are going to adopt their template of transparency within the extractive industry. Isn't that, basically what Mauritania has, just decided to do?
Yeah, but remember, our government guys haven't said anything.
That's exactly my point. Like, they sort of like haven't said yes, no, or maybe.
Or we are coming, we are going, we are almost there, we understand you, zero. They just said yes, we will be there, and then
decided to bail out. So right now they haven't said yes, no, or maybe. So they're just in the dark.
Mm.
And that's my favorite
you know, phrase in the, you know, my favorite phrase in the Russian language. Da нет, наверное. Yes, no, maybe.
Yeah, but as long as you're not using that other word in Russian.
No, it literally
that
means.
That is the Afrikaans. No, foul word.
It basically means what or who?
Still don't use it.
Okay, no. Okay. I want to see.
You know what? I read one of your Russian translations. I was like, what? There's like two words here that I will not commit to saying.
Look, if
to any Afrikaans speaking woman in Namibia, because I was like, nah.
Look, if you're an Afrikaans speaker, stay away from Russian. or if you work for Legal Shield, there's also, no. Actually, just the word shield itself. Now, coming back to that, now the yes, no, maybe part, that's, I think, where the civil society is providing a different recommendation, and again, it's just the recommendation.
Mm.
And the ministry seems to have a different point of view in mind with regards to how they intend to bring about, transparency or increase transparency or implement transparency or improve transparency or just the practice in general of transparency, especially in the extractive industry.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm not saying one of them should adopt the other's idea. It's just, it's very simple to just sit across the table and say, okay, you know what? Why are you saying we should join the AITI? Because, this is the system that we have and it seems to work just fine and we are amending it. And, we are patching things up to make sure that it's as transparent as possible, especially when it comes to the oil and gas industry, that by the time we reach a production phase, we don't have a sieve. We have a bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now on the transparency part, yeah, so that they, just pour the oil, then it's all gone. Right now we have a sieve.
A sieve. Yeah. It's more like a funnel. There's nothing catching it. It's just flowing through.
Yeah. Because if you look at, transparency, transparency and parliamentary reporting. Now, this is actually a brilliant one. The bill introduces new measures to strengthen fiscal transparency and accountability. And it requires that all remissions, deferrals and refunds of petroleum royalties be reported annually to the National Assembly by 30 June.
Which sounds wonderful in paper. It's a wonderful promise to make. However, we have to see it happen.
That there's a comma there.
A big comma.
Yeah. National Assembly by 30 June. Where is that? It requires that all the remissions, deferrals, or refunds of petroleum royalties be reported annually to the National Assembly by 30 June through a designated minister or prime minister.
Now, here's the concern, Helmut.
Shouldn't it just be through the Minister of Mines?
Because if certain powers and stuff are elevated to the presidency with that new unit,
mm-hmm.
how would the Auditor General or the Ministry of Finance be able to verify the data?
So now the Auditor General, when they want to compile a report on this, are they going to the upstream petroleum unit, which is a unit under the presidency, Ministry of Mines, or the designated minister, or prime minister?
Who are they going to talk to? Are they going to talk to Ministry of Finance, or is Ministry of Finance first going to do that verification? Because...
Okay. It's an interesting one.
It is an interesting thing.
Okay, but it just looked like it's unnecessary spider web for me.
Yeah, and it's one of the questions I could not ask at the EITI platform because obviously the organizers were trying to maintain the time frame as tightly as possible.
Yeah.
But it made things tricky in the sense of when you look at what the EITI conversation was taking place with civil society and with NAMCOR that was there present with... temporary or interim MD, that being the former Deputy Minister of Finance, Madam Murininda Mbwende. It was a conversation that was just contained to that platform.
Yeah.
But you can clearly see it's a conversation potentially that would expand later on. But the move that Minister Amutse actually began 2 weeks back in National Assembly, because this, you have to think like in chess, playing moves or scenarios. At the heart of this is obviously that President Nandi Ndaitwa highlighted last year in an inauguration speech with the launching of the NDP6, with the unveiling of a candidate, of a cabinet at the start of last year as well, at the, obviously, you know, at the public address she gave to the Ministry of Mines staff and officials last year after the removal of the former minister, was at every level she highlighted that decisions need to technically be in a scenario where there is a greater understanding of what is to be the derived benefits from oil and gas. So, okay, I'm being slightly political in that sentence. So as I almost, because people are catching about the English I use. So, yeah, let me once again.
Rephrase.
Let me rephrase again, but actually to rephrase to clarify what I just said. So I don't want to speculate on words that have not been mentioned.
Yeah.
That's one of the clear things. However, speculation obviously will always happen because it's something that us humans do. The context being that we've seen now four instances literally where the president has mentioned that first and foremost, there will be a greater drive for transparency and accountability measures.
Yeah.
We obviously still have not seen the quarterly reports that she referenced back in last year. And I want to see where do these quarterly reports pop up. Do they get submitted also to the presidency? Do they get submitted to the prime minister? What's going on? However, this is a notion in terms of now, there's now 4 years left in the presidency, Helmut, in terms of seeing what decisions can still be made in the 4 years between today, 2026, the 13th, and end of, where are we? 2030. Start of 2030 or end of 2030. No, start of 2030.
Yeah.
So, we still don't know what's going to happen, even though we know what's going to happen. Whether or not the actual claim to transparency and accountability and good governance, as Minister Amutse highlighted in his speech of 2 weeks back, will actually transpire, or would the presidency look at incorporating potentially the EITI standard to assist in what Minister Amutse announced. Now, clearly, Minister Amutse has obviously to listen and to follow orders and stuff, obviously, from the highest office in the country. Usually, how I understood the situation was that everything flows through Prime Minister's office to the other ministers, but this obviously has to, as an indication of shortening that
chain of command,
and the chain of command discussion, and obviously ensuring that everybody knows in those particular decision-making capacities of all moves and all options and all benefits and all developments that are going to happen in our economy regarding oil and gas. And that's the only thing I can say about that, guys. It's literally the only thing, because what's going to be the next decision that's going to be taken? How quickly will these amendments happen? The reason, Helmut, why I read that one sentence of the minister at the start of our discussion in terms of where he highlighted the modernization, the speeding up. And if you also look at the other sentences that you read from his speech, the ones of, you know, the governance, the transparency, the improved governance,
reporting.
The improved transparency and accountability aspects, is a question of, is this hinting potentially of, we are open to accepting other templates that can assist in these particular promises that are highlighted? Or are we saying this is going to be soul searching? We're going to improve on our own characters. This is now like you telling the goat, please goat, stop acting like a goat and start acting like a lion.
By trial and error.
I mean, we have we have Ministry of Finance that can do reporting. We have the Auditor General's Office that can do reporting. We have NAMRA that can do reporting, and NAMRA reports to MOF. We have Immigration that can do reporting, Hamut. We have NAMPOT that can do reporting. Because remember, think of this as a trade component. And there are so many agencies, government offices, and government elements that, or state-owned and state-owned entities that can assist in a reporting function. Just about oil and gas.
Now, look, when it comes to the whole whatever template of transparency in the extractive, and I know that all eyes are on oil and gas right now.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't have a problem, at least personally, I don't have a problem with the, you know, with the upstream petroleum unit, is the, let's call it the UPU. Really? Who came up with that?
You. No. You came up with that. Ahmed, you gave that name.
I know. Like, look, every time I read that, I keep thinking of the procurement policy unit under the Ministry of Finance. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but think, okay, why didn't they just take the same template and take the upstream petroleum unit and put it under the Ministry of Mines?
Mm.
But they're experts. I'm pretty sure they know what they're doing. But personally, I don't have a problem with the upstream petroleum unit being run, being placed under the Office of the President.
Yeah.
Because I'm a firm believer of the fact that because it is a fact. Legislations, that's everything.
Mm.
You can take this regulatory authority and put it under any ministry. Mm. Without the right regulations in place, power will be abused.
Yeah.
So, if you're going to put it under, whether you're going to put it in the, in the office of, under the presidency or office of the president, or you're going to put it under the office of the prime minister, or you're going to put it under the office, under the Minister of Mines, the regulations regulating the regulatory body is going to matter a lot.
Yeah.
Because if the regulatory authority has a lot of holes, that's going to open power for abuse, irrespective of which ministry you put it under or which executive office you put it under.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's why I said, the regulation for me is very central. And I know there's a little bit of a convolution when you look at it from, in terms of transparency alone, come from the from the Office of the Presidency, now where the Minister of Mines is going to fit in because the extractive industry is their thing. It's like taking an environmental regulatory body, taking it out of the Ministry of Environment, and then putting it under the Office of the Prime Minister. Everyone, I mean, you're bound to ask questions. Mm. Why not just in that ministry?
Mm.
Yeah,
which is a good idea, but obviously, as we have also seen, sometimes when a new administration comes in, policy documents are developed, and I even thought about this. At the start of this week, in terms of just the various discussions that we've outlined, that we've laid out for ourselves in our planner, has been, I've gone to so many events, someone where people were presenting just wonderful things. And then, as you then look at and look, I'm not looking down on our government officials, but I was once again surprised today, when I came from another particular public engagement that there's so much knowledge around us where we can literally just go to the internet, use something, and then have a meeting between yourselves and then say, listen, let's try and implement this thing.
Yeah.
We'll inform our executive director and the minister that we wish to roll out this particular project or this initiative. And it would be something just to work from. However, now we've got to have these grandiose moves and announcements and being invited to a press conference. Please go and report that we are now going to do this.
Yeah.
And you sit there going like, time can be saved in terms of shortening the cycle in terms of improvement. And how do you wish to, you see something doesn't work, you change the policy or the direction of that policy to say, listen, let's try and improve on on what was experienced. Yeah, this is a one good thing I forgot to mention. All our discussions so far, Helmut. I watched a video of a guy that interviewed a business owner or a business, but he's an American or Canadian living in China, running a business in China, operating in China, and he has to stay there specifically to operate his business. And the guy asked him, what has he seen specifically between the business culture in China and the business culture from where he comes from in North America? And he highlighted, it's not about putting fault at, for example, the politicians or the government exec or the government officials. It's more like self regulation to see if this policy idea doesn't work out, change the policy.
Yeah.
Now, to you and me, Helmut, you and I can already identify that just means open up your Microsoft Word or your Google document and retype the mission and vision statement of...
Edit and then, hello.
Yeah.
This and this and this have not been working. You changed it here. Have a good day.
Yeah. And go and announce once again at a press conference, invite the media, go and announce again, and literally say, we realize this thing did not work. We are closing the chapter on this previous version of this policy. Mm-hmm. Here's a new version of this policy. Let's try and work from here. Now we're going to sit with, for example, like policy ideas like the transport policy, the transportation policy of 2018 for Ministry of Works and Transport. And only in 2025, we are starting to talk about urban mobility concepts. And I was so happy when such a particular discussion of policy was popping up at a local authority level. But I was disappointed when Ministry of Works officials were presenting a policy of 2018 and 2025.
Oh, why?
I'll say it again, dear listeners. 2018, 2025. There's a 7-year difference.
Yeah.
There's a 7-year difference. Surely someone must have gone and said, okay, let's kindly update this thing. It's a policy. Let's update it. And it shouldn't take a week. It shouldn't take, okay, it can take a week, at least 2 weeks. It shouldn't take more than a month to update that thing. Meaning you go talk to stakeholders, you invite the GIZ guys back who wrote that whole document, because you can clearly see it wasn't Ministry of Works' people that wrote it. Bring back the GIZ guys and ask them, okay, let's have another meeting. Let's look at what we can update. And whether or not this thing is still applicable. We're not doing these things. We're not being adaptable. We're not looking like adaptable policymakers. I'm part of the Namibian government. But they don't look like they are being adaptable or adaptive policymakers. They don't look like they the only time when they respond to a situation is whether it's disaster risk management, or when it's some sort of agricultural and environmental crisis, or whether it's a health crisis, then that's the only time that we actually respond. And that is all within a disaster management template. So, primarily, the policies, the policy making, the policy generation has to take on a similar particular approach. Be adaptive. Be moldable, be open to be edited. It's just a document.
Don't make it easy to edit. So if you end up with an Austrian painter, the editing is going to go wild under 24 hours.
Where do we have to add in the Austrian painter?
It's made it difficult to edit on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you don't want someone waking up scratching their head and going, you know what? I don't like this. Now, here's the thing. Now, the point I tried to make earlier when you look at it from an oil and gas industry, like everyone that's involved in this, especially the extractive guys, the one with the experts, the science expertise, to study and analyze and everything so that by the time that we reach production phase, everything is set and ready.
Yeah.
So that all those things, basically the whole upstream activities requires legislation that's going to run on. Now, the lawmakers
wants to put, you know, the lawmakers want to make sure that by the time that we reach production, we have a regulatory authority like this upstream petroleum unit, and we have the legislation that the entity will be running on.
Yeah.
And it will be positioned where? Under the office of the president, and under the office of the president, and you have the experts on the ground, more like the experts on the sea, doing all this analysis to putting all the, you know, all the pieces in place to make sure that production phase is achieved. So, and we are looking at least 10 years from now,
and that's hoping we are adequately monitoring in out there on the sea.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, I know we are operating on trust me, bro. But look,
it sounds.
I know, right?
It sounds literally like a loan that you're making. Trust me.
Trust me, bro.
Trust me, I'll pay you back.
Yeah. So trust me, bro. Yeah. I mean, it's who has the modes of transport to pay frequent visit to a place that is. About 300 kilometers offshore.
Trust me. I trust you. Don't worry. Look after the environment.
You look after it. You know, there'll be no any, you know, oil spilling or any type of environmental disaster. I mean, well,
we trust you.
We trust you to tell us.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a terrible idea.
No, it is. It's a horrible idea. But yeah, that's what we're literally saying. We trust you to trust us. The trust goes five ways.
We have more faith in these guys than God. But look.
yeah. Well, you know, if we've got to look at a trust scenario.
Yeah.
Obviously, the trust has to come through the kind of policy making that we're applying. Now,
I have one question though. Yeah. How is the, you know, this whole site visit by the, you know, the standing National Assembly Standing Committee on Natural Resources?
Mm.
How are they planning on going 300 kilometers offshore to do site visiting?
Who are they going to call? Are they going to work through NAMCOS people or through the ministry's people?
And please don't say Kavangos. No one swims 300 kilometers.
And then ask those drilling companies whether they can approach.
Yeah.
Because there's also a boat operator that has to operate between the coast and those platforms. How are they going to get there to literally see the impact? Because I still have to see how these guys have literally gone to the mining companies.
Yeah.
And I remember under the previous, what was that guy's name? The MP, Chikero Tuya, who was also the chairperson of the previous, Natural Resources Committee. They didn't go and talk to the mining companies. They didn't. It would have been lovely to know.
Okay, but don't they have like spokespersons that you can talk to?
But the thing is, they're supposed to have access to these mining companies and ask them literally come and present to us what you've done, how you've acted. Because I saw them do this with, what was that entity's name? The lithium, the Oist lithium illegal mining thing.
Yeah.
Remember that standing committee literally met with the company.
Yeah, they went there.
They went there. They literally met with the company. Yeah. So if they literally display to us that they can access even the private sector with their management and ask them literally, explain your side. Why should we only be talking to the ministries and the governments? That was also one of the, remember the discussion of the home run that we had where I was unhappy with the previous Standing Committee of Economic Affairs when they were supposed to talk to the commercial banks about their pricing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they only spoke to the Bank of Namibia governor and the Namfisa persons. And then in the afternoon, they interviewed the Consumer Protection Directorate from the now non-existent Ministry of Industry and Trade. And we didn't see anything else after that. They didn't interview the CEOs of the commercial banks to ask them what are their pricing strategies. Why does it look like the pricing is heavy or looks severe? Zero, nothing, no direct contribution by private sector corporates. And in that same year, they got their Electronic Transactions Act implemented for them in the same year. Now I get to ask you, Hamid, if we already had that precedent, then that means for oversight purposes, definitely the standing committees can definitely approach private sector companies and ask them, please explain to us what you do. Please explain to us your environmental strategy for Namibia's environment and with regard to Namibia's laws. Please explain to us your corporate social responsibility strategy. How does it help and benefit local communities, the employees you have, XYZ and XYZ, and then way forward. They can do this.
Dude, what you just pointed out, this is ugly. Now, I'm saying that because, if you look at the Nature Resources Standing Committee with the quote unquote illegal lithium mining that they went to do, they went on a fact finding mission because there's a lot of chaos going there. What's one of the things that the local residents were complaining about? There were a lot of pits that were dug that a lot of their domestic animals were now falling into.
That were left by the previous operators.
Yeah. Why did they leave the land unrehabilitated? Yeah. For me, that points to lack of oversight.
Yeah.
They were supposed to be there on a frequent basis to make sure that rehabilitation is taking place. But from the look of things, obviously those pits were left open because no one was there to ensure that they were not left open.
Mm.
Now that new entities showed up there, now they had to deal with they had to start their operations by dealing with the consequences of the previous operators.
Mm.
That's when the standing committee now shows up to try and solve the problem. But here's the thing: if you guys showed up when the previous guys were operating, these pits would have been rehabilitated,
yeah.
And these cattle or whatever domestic animals that are falling in these pits would not be falling in there. So these new operators would not be having this bad blood with the local residents. So again, it points to the regulation problem.
Yeah.
All you had to do was show up and say, okay, now this and this and this are rehabilitation procedures of your industry. What are you doing? Now, the fear for me is if we can't do that on a small scale lithium mining operations.
Yeah.
The question that every reasonable person would start asking themselves is just how much are we doing with the big mining operations? All these are onshore, and if we are this terrible at regulating everything that's onshore, just how effective are we going to be at regulating something that's offshore? And you have to understand that multinational corporations are not don't babysit them, because if they find loopholes, they're going to use it. There are a lot of oil rigs. Again, that are under quote-unquote rehabilitation on paper. But in practical reality, they've been abandoned. Do you find a bunch of them? You find a bunch of them somewhere around the Gulf of Mexico. And the problem with that is a lot of private entities, if they find a loophole that will enable them to cut costs, they're going to take it.
They will.
Yeah. I know I would.
And if there's no one that can supervise them what they're doing, they will definitely also.
Yeah, they will.
Go down that particular lane.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and we'll come back right after this.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are looking at the upstream petroleum, the petroleum upstream or upstream petroleum exploration and production. Okay, just petroleum, petroleum exploration and production amendment bill before 2034, 2035. We want to make sure that we are ready.
Okay, but before we get there, we'll quickly take
a Before we get there, let's take a live read. 2035 is way far from.
Davita University, where the 2026 applications are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses: Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Public Health, and Master for Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. So in preparation for our production phase of our oil and gas upstream industry, turns out downstream, yeah, don't even think about that. In preparation for that, we decided, you know what, we are going to make sure that the Petroleum Exploration and Production Act of 1991, let's make sure that it's amended in a way that it's up to date and in line with our oil and gas industry.
Yeah,
I'm looking at that and going like, well, we just discovered the oil. Why is this thing coming from 1991? Do we have a little bit of faith?
Well, here's the thing, Helmut. There was an interesting interview that I watched once, just literally in 2023. And it was an interview that was conducted on a governance aspect or dimension. And at that stage, it was the current, what's the guy's name? The current chief or the head of the organization for, the financial, okay, not the head, the person below that. Financial Intelligence Center, the FIC. I forgot the gentleman's name, but I wrote an article last year about the presentation they gave to the civil society about disclosing and beneficial ownership discussions regarding where they get their financing from and where the financing comes from outside of Namibia. And it was literally the first half of that day where we had the presentation or the speech by the Minister of Finance, Minister Shifuda, regarding the development budget and the extent of which that took place. And that same is it ASAP? The guy's name. But anyway, when he was still in the Ministry of Mines and Energy by that time in 2023, he was asked the question, why do we have all this old legislation? And he mentioned, which is something automatically for those of you that would have studied Namibian law or studied, been in a law school somewhere, is that literally since we were colonized, we didn't make up our own laws. We just inherited all these laws.
Yeah, pretty much.
And at the start, and this was based upon the first concept of mineral beneficiation strategy that popped up. You remember we did the mineral beneficiation policy, which was a collaborative document of Ministry of Mines and Energy and the Ministry of Trade and Industry together about how to explain how Namibians would benefit more from the minerals, which in itself sounded nice on paper, but in reality we are not seeing it literally occur. So the context of the discussion was based upon the mineral beneficiation or local content policy and mineral beneficiation for Namibians.
Yeah.
And the question of why are our laws so old since 1990 and you're in 2023, 2024, 25, 26, and it just looks old. And then they obviously answered with the obvious starting point. We inherited a lot of these things. But on that Petroleum Act and even the Minerals Act, Helmut, he literally highlighted that at a time when Namibia became independent, Namibia had to act in that space, that 1 or 2 years up to 1992, in order to protect the minerals and to protect future exploration, to protect deposits, and to protect the citizens that are contained within the borders of Namibia, and to protect the environmental aspects of the lay of the land, mm-hmm. being that we literally had to find our feet. And it was literally an exercise of finding our feet. And he also highlighted specifically that it was a period of transition, a period where you now know that decision-making is not made from Pretoria or Cape Town.
Yeah.
Decision-making is now happening in Windhoek. And decision-making has to be in line with your constitution, your Namibian constitution, and decision-making has to be to the benefit of Namibians, no longer to the South Africans that were governing us. So it was a, not a satisfactory answer, but an answer that literally meets the requirement for depicting a picture that we had back then. The picture we've got now, the picture of now is a picture of, okay, so we've known since COVID, Helmut, that we are participating in green hydrogen. We've known since 2022, after COVID, that Namibia now has oil deposits. Since 2020, we've also had very publicly announced and even advertised oil exploration activity. We've also been sold the idea of gas to power since 2023. And only now we are seeing a move on the updating our legislation, the laws.
Hey, we're still early, dude. We're still like 10 years early.
I'm not even talking about that, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the example of the National Arts Council or the Act of the National Arts Council.
National Arts Fund.
Yeah, that law. The reasoning given by the National Arts Council people when we listened to the audio, was that technically you shouldn't wait 15 years. Now, when you look at petroleum exploration activities and the Act, the Mineral Act itself, we've literally waited 35 years to firstly decide to say, yes, we need to update things. We also still have to factor in, is there going to be a completely different act for green hydrogen? Because green hydrogen is not extracted. I've not heard anything about green hydrogen legislation. Because green hydrogen is not a mineral that you're taking out of the ground or out of the sea or even fish. It's not even agricultural activity. It's a manufacturing concept. But we're not seeing anything. We're literally not seeing anything.
Look, this is where this is why I keep going back to Mr. Shebon's explainer of understanding the extractive industry. It's massive in terms of investment requirement. And also, a return on investment, very high, which is why a lot of countries that have a lot of natural resource deposits find themselves more often in Dutch case, because it's very easy if you have a thriving extractive industry, for example, it's very easy for everyone to start saying, okay, now there's a lot of revenue going there because of the high return on investment. Mm. There's a lot of revenue that I can get if I can, you know, if I can go to school, study this field of study that's in line with that industry so I can work in there and earn a good living. So what you end up, you know, what happens in now in a long run, 5-10 years down the line, is that you are bound to notice an oversupply in that industry, and then an undersupply in industries like agriculture. At the end of the day, if you have an underproducing agriculture sector, where are you going to get most of your food? You have to buy it from other countries.
Mm.
Now, when that resources and resources are finite, when that resources runs out, and now you have a bunch of petroleum experts and you don't have enough agricultural experts, now, you know, most of the experts that you have are experts in a resource that's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And the money that you used to buy the food that you that you used to buy from outside the country, you don't have it anymore. Now you have to restructure and retrain a bunch of people to into other lines of work that is available in the country. So it's really understandable. So that high return on investment is sort of like a step one if it's not supervised properly.
Mm.
That's a slippery slope into the Dutch case. So how do you prevent that? Alaska, Norway,
even what's the other country's name? There's a country that also pays a direct benefit to people. What's the country's name?
Uzbekistan.
Okay, you've got the Arabic guys. One thing that popped up, Helmut, was there was this interesting conversation that I had with one of my siblings that tried to read up about, because she studied industrial psychology. So the conversation always there is about it being interested in what motivates people to do certain jobs, what motivates people, or what are the also some of the economic factors that influence certain kinds of industrial behavior.
Yeah.
And one of this was a famous, firstly, I'll add in one that I read about, you know, the longevity of oil, meaning the lifespan of oil, if you're a country that has oil, was a comment that came through from the Qatari Sultan, or the Omarian, or the Sultan of Omar, or I think it's the UAE or the Kuwaiti guys, who highlighted that, where they said, the guy literally said, my grandfather rode camels. He didn't drive this Lamborghinis and flashy cars.
Yeah.
He is now driving the Lamborghinis and the flashy cars and living in gold-plated palaces. And his son will have the Lamborghinis and the flashy cars and the gold-plated palaces. But he probably knows that after his son, his grandson, or his great-grandson after that, probably will return back to the camel, to riding camels. Being specifically that, obviously, the oil trade is not going to be there forever. And second scenario is also the interesting thing that my sister read, because of her education background, specifically in industrial psychology, being that the Qataris have an issue, or is it the Qataris or the UAE or the Kuwaitis, one of those three countries, they've got an issue with actually doing the work in their country. So I'm talking about work like...
why would I work?
Why do I want... But actually to work in their country, because if you go to those nations, specifically like Qatar and the UAE and Oman, Helmut, you'll find a lot of Filipinos, a lot of Thai, a lot of Malaysians, a lot of Indians from India, a lot of Pakistanis in those countries, a lot of Westerners, Europeans and Americans, North Americans working there who are not indigenous to those countries.
Yeah. Because Africans.
Even Africans, because the locals don't want to work there. Now, why do the locals not want to work there? And it's because they also have that similar particular universal basic income grant derived from their natural resources. Because, I mean, Helmut, the one guy said in Dubai, we don't drive to a petrol station. He sits in the car and he calls the petrol station to bring him fuel.
So he just gives them the quantity. I need like, you know, 70 liters or something.
Come and fill up my car. Stuff like that. Now, you could obviously see the opulence. You can see the level of opulence, obviously speaking about over-the-top wealth. Yeah. You can see the wealth. But the citizens of that country know that there's a ticking timer about having this money, about earning this money.
Yeah.
And this is all they've got going for them.
Oof, but when you live in a society like that and that resources runs out,
That's one of the reasons why the Saudis are busy buying into entertainment companies.
Yeah.
They bought that club that I've been supporting since 1999, Newcastle United.
Because that's a Dutch case on a whole another level.
Yes, it is. They're trying to diversify the income streams for their country. Imagine this, Helmut. Running a country like a company. And that's literally what the Saudis are doing. So now, I mean,
the name of the country isn't that like the name of the family.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they literally established an investment, a sovereign wealth fund, né? that acts like an investment vehicle, investing in the sectors and industries of other countries. So they went and bought Newcastle United, so that Newcastle United has to make money for the PIF, which makes money for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They've gone and bought various other things, entertainment aspects. So that those entertainment aspects, and like Ubisoft, is most being bought, I think, by the Saudis. Or they want to sell Ubisoft, but they sold one part of Ubisoft to a Chinese company, I think Tencent, or the other major computer game company. And we're sitting with such weird scenarios of, okay, is this strategy sustainable? Is it really sustainable? And they are trying various particular mechanisms of trying to ensure that there's longevity to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, still earning enough financing or enough revenue for its particular needs.
So there's a backup plan.
But is the backup plan solid? Mm-hmm. That's the big question. But before we continue, we'll quickly take another short live read break. Yeah. Vivici University, where the 2026 applications are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences. For the following courses: Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvica University, where everyone is an achiever.
No, I'm still stuck on the level of Dutch case. That's for you, Yango, in a service station.
Look, it wasn't even Yangoing a service station. It's more like what's the thing's name?
Just call it a dialer service station. That'd be nice.
It's more like a dialer meal situation.
Yeah.
A service station.
Yeah. Okay. Legislation-wise, I think the Ministry of Industries, and mines are going to have to sit in the same room somewhere between today and 2034. And just say, you know what, okay, are we going to come up with our own, are we going to build our own extractive industry, the transparency legislations from the ground up, from existing legislations within that sector?
Mm.
Or are we going to, toss that aside and adopt the EITI model? Or we are going to complement basically merge the two and, shape off where they don't match so that we are only left with what works for us. Because you have to understand that, the EITI is also, that's why they emphasize that we are not, we don't go to countries and dictate terms.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. So, because it's very easy to misinterpret it that way. We don't dictate terms. We just, as long as you are a signatory, that's when, we basically, we're giving you our template.
Yeah.
It's not something that we're selling you. We're just sharing you, we're sharing our template of how we made it work. It's Norwegian, remember? They made it work.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is why, was that on our first, oil and gas conference? When the Norwegian ambassador to South Africa had to, showed up and gave one heck of a presentation on how to avoid the Dutch case. The thing is, natural resources is finite; it's going to run out. So divestment of investments is a brilliant idea.
Mm.
Which is why the Norwegian sovereign wealth fund. It's not just a pile of money sitting in a vault somewhere. It's invested in multiple areas of investment. And sometimes investments go north, sometimes it goes south. Ask the IPF. I'm not going to their office anymore.
Amud, you can only go one way. Okay, two ways. Positive, it stays on a flat line.
Yeah.
Not so positive, it's usually down.
Yeah.
I've never seen going north. But yeah.
If you invest in a sector and it's the return on investment is good, I would say that's going just fine. And if you invest in an oil well and then you find out, like some entities found out last year, unfortunately, that one of the wells did not have any economic viability. So they basically had to cut their losses before they invest any further. Like, now the loss was in billions.
No, wasn't it 400 million US?
400 million.
Okay, if you convert it into $1 million.
I felt pity for those guys until you said, don't worry, the insurance guys are taking care of it. So they're good.
And that's the thing. How much, do you know what's the worst part? When I thought of, when on our, obviously, coming to the studio, just before we stepped into this studio, was when you look at everything in the world, it's all about risk taking. The minister, Amutse, standing in parliament and saying, listen, we're going to make these changes to the Petroleum Act and so forth and so forth. It's all based upon a risk of trying to achieve a particular desired position.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at taking risks, for example, like that, what was that term they used? The writing off that took place by Shell last year was because they knew. They spoke with their financial advisors, which is their Department of Finance and their bankers and their insurance company, that they told those guys, listen, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Insure the money that way. And everybody was like, okay, we understand. You're taking a risk. What does the situation look like? Exploration activity is risk taking.
Gambling, basically.
It's technically you hitting a... do you know what's the worst part I discovered, Albert? Do you know how bad it is drilling a borehole for private or commercial farmers in Namibia? You know how expensive it is?
No.
Imagine, Helmut, you are trying to look for water in some of the driest parts of Namibia. You're trying to drill for water. Yeah. And it costs you 200,000 per drill, per borehole, exploratory borehole.
So you're just testing, like, there's no water here, let's move to the next part of the...
So if there's nothing there,
uh-huh,
and it's just dust and air, it's 200,000 that you've wasted.
Let's move to the next one and see if...
And then 200K if it's also a hit and miss there. And remember, this guy has to come from where? And there's a guy in Windhoek that I saw driving through Windhoek with his truck.
Yeah.
It's literally this drilling truck.
Yeah.
I was like, eish! Inviting that guy out to your farm.
Okay, but there's some kind of surveys that they do that helps them, or methods that helps them determine if there's, which places are most likely to contain water and which places don't.
Yeah.
Because if you just cross your fingers, you're going to leave the whole farm full of holes.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
It's not easy. So I could understand oil companies exploring and they have to invest $400 million into an activity. And then they come up and say, you know, it's too far to drill, or it's too deep to drill. Mm-hmm. Or it's too rocky to drill, or it's just not the right kind of oil that we want.
And now, look, the thing is, all that amount of money that you're talking about, and that's about drilling for water on land. Translate that into drilling for oil. 300 kilometers offshore.
Mm.
How many kilometers downwards?
It was 3
kilometers from the surface to the to the seabed.
Yeah, from the surface to the seabed, and another 3 kilometers below. They had to drill for three
from the seabed to where the oil is.
Yeah,
that's another 3 kilometers.
There's another 3 kilometers. Yeah, it's a lot of space.
So you need a pipe that is, 6 kilometer long?
Firstly, you need a drill and a motor and an engine that can drill that far, that deep. And remember, you still have to deal with water pressure.
How much power are you running this drill on that is 6 kilometer long? Yeah.
Good question, Helmut.
Good
question, Elwood.
And you find out that it's not the oil you're looking for, so you just have to go like, boss, you're not going to like this.
Mm.
Yeah. That money, poof.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, 4 minutes into the hour of, 4 minutes into the hour of six, that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. For those of you that just tuned in, you have tuned into the end of Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, switching to business and economic segment with David. And in case you missed it, it was, petroleum exploration and production amendment bill that is basically the amendment of the 1991 act of the same name.
Yeah.
And that's in preparation of that's in preparation of Namibia's oil and gas industry, making sure that the piece of legislation that the industry will run on is they are all up to date. Mm. You know, by the time that we hit production, the laws are also in place. Who is going to be reporting to who? Who is going to be, you know, taking the money and then give it to who?
Mm.
For some reason, at this point, according to these amendments that we want to make, that we are planning on making, actually in the process of making, the entity that will be regulating the upstream industry. Aspect of things is going to be positioned under the under the office of the president.
Yeah.
And there's a whole convoluted chain of command on how things are going to flow. I can only imagine.
Well, we can only imagine.
Yeah, we can only imagine.
We can always just imagine.
All I know is we are going to have a lot of reports. And I'm still looking forward to the Standing Committee on Natural Resources to, still looking forward to their report on, well, we visited the site 300 kilometers offshore. And this and this and this is what we found. So, Honorable Minister, how sure are you that you are just, you were not told you better ride this or we're going to throw you overboard?
The only thing I want them to technically satisfy,
yeah,
is firstly, Helmut, they've got to show to us that they are willing to meet with the private sector instead of just talking to a director in a directorate of a ministry here and hoping that that person satisfy all their information needs. That's all I want to see. Because if you're really
private forum is not
was not even complete, because even there, the private sector guys were saying, come talk to us first for first option, which literally closes off the avenue for small businesses who wish to grow.
Yeah.
Literally closes off other particular avenues for other particular entities. And it was a weird thing, that public-private forum. I'll be honest, it had a weird flavor to it. It literally had a weird texture to it. I'm sorry for using other words technically to describe, but it sounded, it walked, it acted weird. The government officials were trying to be, straightforward, forthright, and honest about where they want to take Namibia.
Yeah.
And it's the public service and it's the private sector guys that showed up and were creepy about the situation. And when I say creepy, No, Helmut, go look at the presentation of the one that included the economist Roland Brown and the business owner, what's the guy's name? Lazarus Jacobs. The speeches that they made there.
Yeah.
Roland Brown was highlighting, okay, let's try to grow and empower small businesses. And then Lazarus Jacobs shows up and says literally, yeah, first, invite us first into the boardroom meetings of the SOEs. And I was like, wait, what's going on here?
Power struggle?
Not even power struggle. It just looked creepy. I'll just say this. The way the Namibian private sector acted those 3 days was creepy.
It's private sector. They always have
something. It's mostly they were happy now that we've got this public forum, but they were acting creepy, which means does the public sector now have to increase its safeguards on accountability, transparency, and governance?
Yeah, I would say yes.
With the actions of what the known actions and tendency and behavior of private sector in Namibia?
One thing I know is that private entities, the world over, priority shareholder dividends. The rest is secondary. So if you give them a leeway, oh no. Now, you don't have to strangle them. Just make sure that you have your regulations in place. Because if you don't have them, oh. When it comes to exploiting loopholes, they're good.
Yeah.
What do you think the Irish sandwich with a Dutch, is an Irish something with a Dutch sandwich, tax avoidance strategies. That's the private sector.
Mm.
If they find a loophole, they're going for it.
Mm.
So if you are going to operate with the private sectors, you are going to, with people out of the private sector, you're going to have to make sure that your legislations are up, they're state of the art.
Yeah.
So, because when it comes to exploiting technicalities, I admire those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, 10 past the hour of David Shombe. So, moving on to business and economic segment. So, you all have a good weekend until Sunday for me. Actually until Sunday for both of us.
And on that note, dear listeners, enjoy the rest of your programming in our company.
Yeah.
And we'll see each other again. Obviously, I'm also on Sunday.
Yeah.
And we'll be back on Monday with the rest of the home run.
Yeah, and I know in Africa we share, but there's some things like Valentine's are not meant to be shared. Relationship problems these days are being solved with shotguns. I would not recommend sharing. Otherwise, have a good weekend.